Updates tuned to yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden age. I'm Mark LeVonier. There is adventure in this hour from the Lux Radio Theater, adapting a film that debuted on screens only 6 months prior to this airing. It's 1954's Secret of the Incas, featuring a pair of its original stars, Nicole Morey and Charlton Heston. In 1981, when the Indiana Jones film franchise began with Raiders of the Lost Ark, this movie, including the outfit that Heston donned, which was a leather jacket, khakis, and a fedora, was, to those who remembered seeing it, pointed to as a big inspiration. It also reportedly inspired an increase in interest and visits to Machu Picchu in Peru. Here's the surviving recording of the broadcast, first heard on December 14, 1954, on CBS.
Lux presents Hollywood. Lieber Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, brings you the Lux Radio Theater, starring Charlton Heston and Nicole Morey in Secret of the Incas. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. Irving Cummings.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. Throughout the ages, men have been willing to sacrifice a great deal in the search for lost treasures, even their very lives. In tonight's play, Secret of the Incas, we will take you to the lofty Andes of Peru and the frantic race to find a fabulous sunburst of the ancient tribe of Incas. And we have the original stars of this exciting adventure drama from Paramount Pictures, Charlton Heston and Nicole Morey. Will join me later in a preview of Paramount. In the high Andes of Peru, the descendants of the Inca have searched for centuries for the symbol of their past glories, a fabulous golden disc encrusted with jewels. Once found, say the legends, the Inca nation will rise again to even greater glories. There are others who search for this golden disc, but for different reasons. One of them is an American. His name is Harry Steele.
It was strictly legitimate, the business that first brought me down here. Peru's a mountain country. Needed air transportation, and I had a plane. Nice, neat, 24-passenger job. That was the beginning of the Harry Steele Charter Airline. It ended with a sudden merger between the nice, neat, 24-passenger job and an extra tall hunk of the Andes. No plane, no income. But there are ways of making a buck, even in Cusco. If you've ever been to Peru, you've heard about Cusco. Maybe you've even landed at the airport there. You might even have seen me hanging around the waiting room talking to Bert Springer. Bert's the American agent for the airline and field manager.
Number 1 window in lobby.
Hey, Harry.
Yeah?
Ed Morgan was looking for you.
Morgan, that makes my day complete. Let's see your flight list.
Well, the plane just coming in?
Yeah. Give me the names of any of them that sound like tourists. Rich tourists.
Mr. and Mrs. Winston from Boston. Mr. and Mrs. Richmond from St. Louis.
Is that it?
That's it.
Okay, Winston and Richmond. Oh, one other thing. Any private planes do in?
You know private planes don't come in here, Harry.
No harm in asking, is there?
The answer is always no.
Yes, someday the answer might be yes.
Suppose a private plane does come in. Then what?
Just between you and me, Bert, I'll steal it.
You...
Arriving passengers will please bring their baggage in the lobby.
You know, Harry, for a moment, I almost believed you.
Yeah, so did I. Where'd Morgan say it'd be?
At El Prado. You ought to stay away from that crook.
Why? He makes me feel honest. Well, here come my pigeons. I'll see you, Bert.
Okay.
Mr. and Mrs. Winston. Mr. and Mrs. Richmond.
Oh, Edgar, somebody's paging us.
I am, madam. Welcome to Cusco, City of Light. I'm Harry Steele. The airlines asked me to guide you around the city. 100 soles a day.
Each.
So maybe the airline hadn't asked me to take over. Nobody ever bothered to check up. I herded the Winstons and the Richmonds into a taxi and delivered them to the hotel. After that, I dropped by Ed Morgan's hangout, El Prado. Spotted a huge hulk of a man bending over the billiard table in the pool room. Morgan.
Ah, I
I've been looking for you, Harry.
Yes, so I heard.
I got a deal for you.
How much?
Why don't you ask what it's about first?
Details come later. How much?
I don't know. It's a girl. Hungarian or Romanian, I'd say, from her name. She needs help.
What kind?
She'll tell you. She gets them tonight from Lafaz, coming by truck.
People don't ride in trucks unless they're trying to get past the border inspection.
That's right.
Well, I'll be seeing you.
Oh, Harry, one more thing.
Mm-hmm. I thought there might be something else.
I hear the archaeological museum just put up a new exhibit, a big stone carving. Inca. Mm-hmm.
That's what you heard, huh?
Heard an Indian found the carving with the corner missing from it.
Anything else?
Heard the Indian sold the missing piece to an American. Mm-hmm. I heard it might be the key to the hidden Inca treasure.
You got good ears, Morgan.
But I just thought I'd mention it in case you had something to tell me.
No, can't think of a thing. Except be seeing you.
As I walked out, I could feel Morgan's eyes boring into my shoulder blades. Then, just as I reached the patio door, I jerked the knife out of the door and swung around. There's nobody in sight, so I turned and headed back for the pool room. Morgan saw me coming, the knife in my hand.
Harry, no rough stuff now. Harry?
Funny thing just happened to me. You see this knife?
Throw it on the floor, Harry.
Who does it belong to?
Not me.
Who does it belong to?
A friend of mine.
That's what I thought. You tell your friend he needs a little practice. His aim is bad.
Well, that's why I use him, Harry. You don't figure I really meant anything serious. It's just a friendly hint.
Yeah. Next time you try hinting to me, Morgan, you better hire a guy that throws a straight blade, because if he doesn't, I'm coming after you.
Now, you're quite a guy, aren't you, Buster? Big, good-looking. Figure you got everything. You know, I was like you once. I came down here to teach him the score. A quick million, and then home. 14 years I've been waiting for a line on that Inca treasure.
Uh-huh. You waited till you're old and fat and tired, didn't you? Even if you make that million now, you're too used up to spend it.
Harry, you got that stone, the missing piece that sets where the treasure's buried. You got it, you know where it is, and you need a partner.
Not you, Morgan.
Listen to me, Harry.
I told you, I'm not interested, Morgan. By the time I got back to the hotel, my party of tourists was unpacked, washed up, and panting to see the sights of Cusco. I gave them a quick whirl through the shops around the plaza, hiked through the university. For the evening show, I brought them back to the main dining room of the Hotel de Turistas. Me, I headed for the bar.
Oh, Mr. Steele. Mr. Steele.
Yeah, something, Mrs. Winston?
My husband isn't feeling well. I just sent him up to the room. Do you think a doctor
might... No, he doesn't need one. Just tell him to take it easy. Stop prancing around the dance floor at this altitude.
Yes. Cusco is over 2 miles high, isn't it?
It is.
Mr. Steele.
Just call me Harry.
Good. The altitude doesn't affect you, does it?
I'm used to it.
Good again. The, orchestra's playing a rumba, Harry.
Mm-hmm. I take my excitement in tall glasses.
You know, you're quite an enigma. All afternoon, I wondered why a man seemingly as capable as you...
buries himself in this half-forgotten corner of the world. A lot of people have asked me that, Miss Winston.
Women?
Yeah. You see, I came down here with an airplane.
And it smashed against a mountain.
You've been asking around, huh? Well, what was left of the plane paid my way out of the hospital, but I owe the Peruvian Mining and Transport Company 8,000 soles for gasoline and hangar space. Till I can pay it, they take a dim view of me getting an exit visa.
An exit visa?
Yeah. Maybe you'd like to lend me the money?
Maybe you'd like to show me some nightlife?
With Mr. and Mrs. Richmond?
That's up to you.
Yeah, there's not much to see. What there is, you'll find at a place called El Prado. Ask for Ed Morgan. He'll take care of you.
Thanks for all your trouble, Mr. Steele. We'll see you in the morning.
Okay. Manuel.
Si, senor.
Another double.
The lady called you, Mr. Steele. Would you be Mr. Harry Steele?
That's right. I don't remember seeing you around.
You haven't. I arrived tonight from La Paz by train.
Oh, yeah. Ed Morgan sent you.
Yes. Please, there is somewhere we can talk alone.
Yeah, come on. Manuel, skip the drink. Hey, you've got seats somewhere in this patio.
It is no matter. Mr. Steele, I am Elena Antonescu.
Romanian?
Yes, a refugee.
How'd you get out, under the fence?
In a way. From Europe, I go to La Paz, and in La Paz, I hear that Mr. N. Morgan in Cusco can help me. Now, Mr. Morgan said it might be Mr. Steele.
Call me Harry.
Thank you.
Just, what's this help to be?
I want to get into the United States.
Why don't you ask me something easy, like a nice little murder or a boatload of penicillin?
All I wish from you is to go north. If I can get even to Mexico, I will be that much closer to the United States.
Yeah. No passport, no papers.
None.
Besides wanting to come to Cusco, any particular reason why you left La Paz?
The police. No visible means of support.
They need glasses.
Please, without your help, I'm in serious trouble.
How much money have you got?
Well, about $50.
You're still in trouble.
But it's all the money I have.
That's not money. That's tips. I'm sorry, but the wheels just don't turn for $50.
I see.
Oh, look. I've seen too many women cry before. It won't work. Maybe if you try somebody else.
There is nobody else. It's no use. You'll come after me.
Who will?
The Romanian consul. He flew to La Paz to get me.
Oh, now it's a different story. It wasn't because of the police in La Paz.
You never leave behind the Iron Curtain. You don't know what it's like. And they do anything to get a refugee back. They'll follow me here.
Well, that still gives you a couple of days to figure something out. The next passenger flight isn't due till Friday.
I didn't tell you that the Romanian consul flies his own plane.
No, you didn't. Flies his own. A big plane or a little one?
I don't know. Why?
Kind of a hobby of mine, planes. He's in La Paz.
Yes.
Well, what's his name?
Anton Marco. Anton.
Huh? Here, maybe you can use this.
What is it?
Key to my hotel room.
Oh, no,
now, look, you've got to stay undercover. The room's all yours till I work out some details.
Details.
Yeah. I'll tell you about them later. One of the details was a phone call I had to make. Long-distance call across the national boundary to La Paz, Bolivia. It was after midnight when I finally made the connection.
Bueno. Bueno.
Señor Anton Marco, por favor.
Yo soy el señor Marco.
Oh, habla usted inglés, señor Marco.
Yes. Who is this?
My name is Steele. Harry Steele, Mr. Marco. It was a very interesting phone call, you might say. Very rewarding. Next morning, I had him send breakfast up to the girl in room 620. After that, mostly to pass the time, I escorted my tourists, Winstons and Richmonds, through the great cathedral and the museum. The curator opened the vault for him, brought out his rarest exhibits.
This was found in a tomb just outside Cusco. And now, our most cherished and most valuable relic.
Oh, a golden sunburst.
Set with the finest jewels of the Inca Empire.
How do we know they're the finest, Señor Fernández? How about that sunburst that was stolen from the Temple of the Sun 400 years ago?
Well, we only know that by reputation. Perhaps it's merely a legend.
Pretty specific for a legend. 30 pounds of pure gold, set with 119 diamonds and 243 other jewels.
And no one knows where it is now?
No one.
You sure, Harry?
Morgan, when did you develop a taste for museums?
Just now. I want to talk to you, Harry.
Wait a minute, listen.
Harry, I'm losing my patience. Harry, will you listen?
I am listening to the most beautiful sound in the world. Got to the airport just as the plane taxied up the strip. A single engine job, just right. Welcome to Cusco, City of Light, Mr. Marcum.
You are the man who telephoned me?
Harry Steele's the name.
And the young lady we talked about?
I have her ready and waiting.
Splendid. And where?
Before we get to that, Mr. Marcum, suppose we talk about pangos, zlotys, whatever you use in Romania.
Oh, your money. I have it here in this envelope, Mr.
Call me Harry. Yeah. It's all here. Okay, now we go talk to Bert Springer.
Springer?
The airport manager. I thought you might like to order a full load of gasoline in case, flying out of here in a hurry, maybe?
You are a man after my own kind, Mr. Steele.
I am, huh? I took Marcou to the hotel, checked him in, and told him he could meet his young lady in the bar in 10 minutes. Then I went upstairs and broke the news to Miss Antonescu. It wasn't easy. I've never seen such a look of terror come into a woman's eyes.
Would it be for me? Just for money?
No. For Marcou's plane. I want that plane so bad I can taste it. I had to use you as the bait to get Marcou to fly it up here.
And you expect him to give you his own plane?
No. I'll get it, but I need your help.
Then you are not ready to turn me over, Marcou.
I never said I was going to. And when I fly out of here, you go with me.
Mexico?
We'll talk about that when we get the plane.
How?
All we need are the keys. That's your job.
He's waiting for us in the bar?
Right now.
Then the sooner the better, Mr. Steele.
Swell. Oh, Miss Antonescu.
Yes?
Call me Harry.
Manuel, the gentleman wants another drink. Pronto.
Si, senor. Pronto. And what about you, Mr. Steele? And our lovely companion.
Okay, 3 drinks, Manuel.
Muy bien, senor. That it, Sabenitz?
And if I agree to return with you?
This che for Bechanglesh.
Because I prefer to speak English.
Senor Steele.
Yeah.
The drinks, senor, you want them as before?
Exactly the same. 1 glass of double scotch, 2 glasses plain soda and iced tea.
But your friend, senor, so much whiskey at this altitude, it goes to the head very bad.
No, really?
There is 7 minutes. Elena, there is 7 minutes.
Perhaps.
Perhaps what?
We are not talking to you, Mr. Steele. Elena, takie nowe nic komine. Takie nowe nic komine.
Yeah, we got that part. What else?
Takie nowe nic komine.
Mr. Steele.
Yeah, right now. The keys are in his hip pocket. I'll put you in the patio. Manuel.
Senor.
Maybe you better help Senor Marcou to his room.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know how it is. Too much whiskey at this altitude, it goes to the head very bad.
Si, very bad, senor.
Here, by the fountain.
The keys?
In his pocket, that's it.
Good girl, let's see them.
What about our luggage?
I'll send a boy up for it. Let's have the keys.
At the right time, Harry.
Huh?
When we are in the plane.
Well, that's the way it's going to be. Just when I thought you were beginning to trust me, Miss Antonescu.
Call me Elena.
Elena and I both needed Marcou's plane, but for different reasons. Timing was everything. We reached the airfield at exactly midnight. That's when the lights in the administration building turn off. The only other light was in the hangar. Marcou's plane was right outside at the head of the runway. Made a wide circle around the hangar just to be sure of everything.
Harry.
Yeah, soldiers.
They're right inside the hangar.
That must be their jeep alongside Marcou's plane.
Then it's impossible.
Maybe not. I think I can get rid of them.
You have a gun?
No. Here's what we do. You start moving toward the plane. Keep to the north side of the hangar so they won't see you. And when the soldiers run out of the hangar, you beat it to the plane. Understand?
I think so.
All right. Now, unlock the plane, get inside, and unlock the instrument panel. Now, about that time, I'll be along.
You're sure?
No. Now start walking toward that plane. I watched him start, then I circled back toward the administration building. Right outside the big glass window of the waiting room, there was a little strip of garden. That's where I found the rock. Now was my chance while the Jeep was racing toward the administration building.
Harry, quickly! Harry!
Made it.
I locked the gun in, Harry, but there are so many switches.
That's my job. Please fasten your safety belts. The Jeep faded away below us as I circled for altitude. We had 8 hours worth of gas, more than enough for my plans. Four hours later, I dropped down to look for a certain landmark. I found it and a place to set down.
Harry, are you sure we're landing in Mexico?
Hardly. We're still in Peru, not too far from Cusco.
But we have been flying for almost 4 hours.
In circles. That clearing coming up at us is all part of my itinerary.
You said you'd take me to Mexico.
I didn't say when. Meanwhile, maybe you've heard of Machu Picchu.
No.
It's an ancient city of the Incas. You'll see it in a few hours.
Why do you want to go to this place?
It's out of the high rent district. Okay, end of the line.
I'm not going with you.
Fine. You wouldn't get far hiking through the jungle in those high French heels, and...
When will you be back?
Oh, 2 or 3 days. You won't be lonely. There's plenty of wildlife to keep you company.
Harry.
Yeah?
I think in my luggage I have walking shoes.
I sat down almost in the bank of the Urubamba River. Marco's plane had a collapsible rubber lifeboat, which we used as a ferry. After that came the jungle.
Harry.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
Look, don't waste your energy on chit-chat.
Where, Harry?
California.
Ah, I know all about California. Everything. All the apples come from there.
Apples? Yeah, sure.
You see? I know everything about the United States. I want to go there to live, so I study and read all about it. Ask me anything, Harry, and I can tell you.
Who cut down the cherry tree?
Abraham Lincoln.
I didn't think you'd know.
Harry, Harry, please. I can breathe.
That's the altitude. Oh. Sit down for a minute.
It's cold.
The altitude.
The altitude, the altitude.
You might as well get used to it. Machu Picchu's still higher.
You have friends there?
I hope not. Nobody goes there. It's just ruins. Huge city of stone built in a mountaintop. The Incas left it and was lost for 1,000 years.
A city of stone. And that piece of stone which you carry... Is it from that city?
What piece of stone?
In your coat pocket. Twice I have seen you take it out and look at it like a man looks at a woman when they are in love.
Maybe this sort of look.
No, you cannot pretend it.
Maybe this sort of kiss.
Why did you do that?
Maybe to change the subject. Come on your feet. Let's move it. It was late afternoon when we reached the crest of the mountain. We came to a precipice with a sheer drop of thousands of feet. Below us was a mist of fog. And then, slowly, here and there through the fog, we made out solid forms, towers of stone. Huge, gigantic, unbelievable towers of stone. Machu Picchu.
It is. How can anyone describe it? A dream.
Uh-huh. And this one's going to come true.
Harry.
I hear it.
Perhaps a ship here.
Not likely. There's something else. Down there at the foot of the ruins. You see him?
Yes, Dan.
Army type. That means there's somebody else here to do some digging. Looks like some sort of an archaeological expedition. Well, we'd better start thinking up a good story for ourselves.
We reached the floor of the valley and started toward the tents. It was a good-sized camp. Beyond, coming down from the ruins, was a long procession of Indians. That's where the music was coming from. We walked almost into the center of the camp before we spotted one of the archaeologists. He was a tall, good-looking guy. He stared at us as if we were some sort of mirage.
Hello there.
Dr. Livingston, I presume?
No, Morehead is my name. We don't have a Livingston with our expedition.
Oh, I see a joke.
My name's Steele, Harry Steele. This is Miss Elena Antonescu.
Pleasure, Miss Antonescu. May I ask how in the world you two happened
our
to be...
Our plane was forced down. Mr. Steele is my pilot.
Yeah, we ran out of gas. Made a landing about 10 miles back. Some natives told us you were up here.
We hoped you might have gasoline.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have no use for it, I'm afraid.
There is gasoline at Tampu, Dr. Moorhead.
Tampu, of course. Miss Antonescu, Mr. Steele, may I present Colonel Cardoza?
How do you do?
How do you do?
I am honored. Well, I'm in charge of this expedition. It's Colonel Cardoza who's the final authority. The colonel represents the Peruvian government and sees to it that we don't appropriate any valuable souvenirs.
Found anything that fits that description?
This afternoon, Mr. Steele, in one of the tombs, we found the mummy of the Mamacuna.
The Mamacuna?
The high priestess of Machu Picchu. It is her mummy which the Indians are now bringing down into the camp. It requires great ceremony.
Mr. Steele, about your gasoline problem.
Oh, yeah, the gasoline.
I'll shortwave to Tampu. That's our supply base, and ask them to send up some by fuel by pack train.
Oh, you have a shortwave set, huh?
Well, naturally. We're very much in touch with civilization up here.
Really? Well, that's comforting to know, isn't it? From the way both Colonel Cardoza and Dr. Moorhead had eyed Miss Elena Antonescu, I wasn't too worried about them being in a sweat to get the gasoline up to us. But that shortwave radio... We ate dinner around the campfire, and afterwards Dr. Moorhead trotted out some of the trinkets they'd found in the ruins. Pottery, necklaces, knives. The whole show was for Elena's benefit.
It's beginning to disappear when these objects were made. We believe that the finest specimens are still to be found somewhere in the ruins above us.
In Manco's tomb, maybe?
You know quite a bit about Inca history, Mr. Steele.
Well, Manco was a great prince, wasn't he?
Yes. We think we have located this tomb. We hope to enter it within a day or two.
You think you'll find the sunburst?
You have heard about that too, eh?
Hasn't everybody?
I haven't. What is this sunburst?
A legend, Miss Antonescu. Supposedly, a great golden plate studded with diamonds and other jewels. The story goes that it was the symbol of Inca power, that it was stolen from the Temple of the Sun and hidden in Manco's tomb. That if this golden sunburst can be found, the Inca nation will rise again to even greater power. Well, this is what the Indians believe.
Even though they're here in your camp?
They, above all, they say there is a map carved in stone, a key that will lead its owner to the great sunburst.
A map carved in stone. How big would this stone be?
See what you've started, Mr. Steele. In another moment, we'll be discussing the positive reality of ghosts.
It's not a bad idea, why don't we? Later, I got the jump in the competition. I took Elena to the special tent that Moorhead had put up for her.
Harry, I know why you wanted to come here.
I figured you did.
Suppose I tell Moorhead or Cardoza.
You won't. Not unless you want to get sent back to Romania for your trouble. Your only way out of Peru is with me.
You forget something, Harry. The radio.
about it?
All they must do is contact any station. They will hear about us, that we stole the Marcos plane.
I don't know. Cardoza tried to use the shortwave just a little while ago. It seems it was out of order.
You take care of everything, don't you, Harry?
Everything. You just relax and have sweet dreams.
Yes. Good night.
Good night.
Harry.
Yeah?
Today, while we were climbing the mountain, we stopped and you kissed me.
I did.
You remember it, Harry. Why did you do it?
I haven't the faintest idea. Good night. Next day, Moorhead and Cardoza invited us to go with them into the tunnel the diggers were driving under one of the temples. Moorhead called one of the Indians over to us.
Pacha Kutak.
Tita.
I want you to meet some new friends. Miss Antonescu and Mr. Steele. Pacha Kutak is pure Inca, descendant of the old princes. In charge of our digging.
The Indian gave me a cold stare and then spat in the ground.
Iskilia, Bruno.
Pacha Kutak.
Tell him I understand Quechua very well.
Oh? Then I must apologize.
Why? What did he say?
He said I have a gray face. The Indians say that for someone not to be trusted. Liar, cheat, even a thief. What do you think, Dr. Moorhead?
Please, this is most embarrassing. But then everyone's nerves are so keyed up. You see, according to our calculations, Blanco's tomb is directly ahead of us. We may break through at any moment.
They didn't break through, not that day or the next. The air in the tunnel was so heavy with dust, Elena and I spent most of our time outside. The third afternoon, I wandered back to my tent to stretch out for a while. As I lifted the tent flap, I saw a pair of boots on my bed.
Come in. Don't be bashful.
Morgan, how did you find me?
Logic, my boy. You stole Marco's plane, but it never turned up at any of the airfields within range of your gas supply. So I figured you hadn't tried to go very far. Maybe just far enough to be near the Inca treasure.
Hasn't been found yet.
But soon?
I think they're in the track of Manco's tomb.
And the sunburst, it'll be there.
That's what it says in the stone.
And you still got the stone.
What do you think?
Hand it over, Harry.
No.
Harry, maybe I should remind you that we're in business together, and it's big business. We just had a meeting, and we selected a new chairman of the board. These six votes are for me.
And the little man with the big gun wins.
The stone, Harry.
It's in my pocket.
All right, take it out. Throw it over here on the bed. Ah, that's nice, Harry. That's real nice.
Well, your feelings are good. What about me? What's our deal?
50-50. We get the sunburst and we get out of here together. When we get back to civilization, we split everything. You trust me, don't you, Harry?
Oh, sure, completely. What about the girl?
I like girls. This one, she could wind up with all I've got if she works at it.
You crumb.
Mr. Steele.
Pacha Kutak, duck that gun.
Okay.
Mr. Steele, is Pacachutek, sir.
Yeah, what is it?
Dr. Moorhead and Colonel Cardoza ask you to come to tunnel. Manco's tomb has been found.
All right, I'll be there.
Thank you.
Well, don't look so unhappy, Harry. That's good news. It's the best. And I'm right here to share it with you.
Now, shut up. I figured I'd have to talk fast, alibi the arrival of Morgan at Machu Picchu, so I told Moorhead and Cardoza that just before the plane crash, I'd managed to send out a radio call. Morgan had picked it up and had come searching for us. But in their excitement, they hardly listened to my explanation.
Gentlemen, this is the most important day of my life. Think of it. The tomb of Manco found.
A great event, yes. I suggest we all have a drink on this.
Right now? But the tomb is...
We breached the wall, but we won't explore the interior until tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yes. Pacha Kutak has requested a delay in order that his people may perform the required ceremonies.
Now we must have ceremonies?
Of course. This is an event of great religious importance to the Incas. But that's no reason for us to put off our own celebration.
No. Mr. Steele, Mr. Morgan, if you would care to join us.
Yes, count us in.
Yeah. Oh,
By the way, Dr. Moorhead, I've been thinking of doing a little hunting up here. You mind lending me a rifle?
Oh, I'm afraid there's no game up at this altitude. We're too high.
Well, I might be lucky. I'll find something to shoot at.
No, we do not have any firearms, Mr. Steele. There is no use for them.
Ah, that's a real disappointment, isn't it, Harry? Not a single gun in camp. Oh, well.
Morgan never let me out of his sight. Dinner, I managed only a few words to Elena. The whole valley glowed that night with the flare of 100 torches. The Indians were streaming in from all sides. From somewhere up the ruined towers of Machu Picchu, we could hear their music. Elena and Moorhead went up to watch the ceremony.
You are a very quiet man, Doctor. You make me feel comfortable.
And yet there's so much I'd like to tell you.
I'm listening.
But you probably find it difficult to understand the excitement occasioned by archaeological findings, but I believe the science of archaeology reached its very peak in Egypt, in the Valley of the Kings. The tomb of King Tutankhamun. An enormous room lined with gold, a gold sarcophagus. Fabulous jewels, rich carvings, alabaster, jade. When they lifted the fantastic sheath of gold that covered the king, they found the most precious thing of all. A single flower on his breast, put there by his wife 4,000 years ago.
Why do you tell me this, Dr. Moorhead?
Because I'm trying to tell you that I love you.
Oh.
And I would like you to be my wife.
But you don't know me.
Elena.
You know nothing about
me. What is there to know?
For 2 years, I've tried to get to the United States. This is only Peru, and I've had to do many unhappy things just to get here.
None of that matters, Elena. Let me take you to the United States as my wife.
To California?
Anywhere you like.
To California, where they have all the apples.
Aren't you thinking of oranges?
Am I?
Yes. California is famous for oranges.
I see. Dr. Moorhead, there is something I must know, something important.
Yes.
Who cut down the cherry tree?
Why, George Washington, of course. But why does it matter?
He lied to me, even about that. Even about George Washington and Abraham Lincoln, you cannot tell the truth. I can never trust you.
But you can't trust the doc, is that it?
He asked to marry me. It is not funny.
Yeah, I guess it isn't. It's just all wrong. A girl like you, you're made for somebody like me, and you know it. We go together like fire and smoke.
No, never. I can do without you. You know why? In my country, when you want to know what kind of man a boy will be, you look at his father. Yes. And this friend of yours, this Morgan, he could be your father.
Morgan? That thieving lump of blubber?
Yes, Harry. I can see him in your eyes. The way you think, the way you talk. One day you will not be Harry anymore. You will be him.
I'm too tall to make a good Morgan.
For a tall man, you are the smallest man I ever met.
I went back to my tent, found Morgan holding the piece of Inca stone under the oil lamp and muttering to himself.
It doesn't make sense. The carving on this stone doesn't look like anything I've ever seen before.
Ever seen a mirror?
A mirror?
Yeah, that's what one of those circles is supposed to be.
You can read it like a book, huh?
Like a book.
Yeah, it looks like I'm going to have to depend on you after all, doesn't it?
Weren't you planning to? Partners, aren't we?
Oh, sure, sure. Oh, man, we wish we could get into that tomb tonight. You know, for 14 years I've been dreaming about that sunburst all of gold and jewels. And now it's almost in my hands. It'll be ours, Harry, ours. We'll split 50-50, a diamond for you and a diamond for me. How about it, Harry, huh?
Keep talking.
$1 million. It's worth that at least. You know, it makes me shake just thinking about it. Yeah, look at my hands. I can't hold them still.
You see, Harry?
I see, yeah.
But what's the matter with you, Harry? Don't stare at me like that. Harry, what in blazes are you looking at? What do you see?
Me, Morgan. Only me.
Next morning, we all entered the tunnel together. Moorhead, Cardoza, Pachacutec, Elena, Morgan, and me. The beam of Moorhead's flashlight showed a hole about the size of a man's head broken into the wall of the tomb. First, it had to be made bigger.
How do they know this is Marco's tomb?
By research, Miss Antonescu. At least we're reasonably sure.
You mean you're not positive it might turn out to be a dud?
No archaeological find is a dud, Mr. Borg.
There we are. Colonel Cardoza, Pachacutec, put on your dust masks.
Hey, what about us?
Only members of the expedition will be allowed to enter the tomb. The rest of you must wait here.
I crawled through the hole, then in a moment we saw Morehead's flashlight sweeping the interior. Morgan started to shake again. Sweat rolled down his cheeks. Lena? She just stood there watching the two of us with an odd look. Then we heard Pachacutec yell.
Oh, what does he say? Well, what does he say?
It's Manco's tomb. Oh, great, great.
Oh, talk in English, you fool.
It's about the sunburst.
Well, have they found it? Harry, have they found it?
Yeah. It's made out of stone. Moorhead and Cardoza had never believed in a golden sunburst, so they weren't disappointed. They'd found Manco's tomb, his mummy, and enough pottery and knickknacks to keep him busy for weeks. But the Indians in the camp, they took the news hard. There was no music that night, only silence and a cold wind.
Very sad for them, is it not?
Oh, I didn't see her.
It is like when one has believed in something of somebody, and they learn it is hopeless.
Only the Indians will believe again. Pachacutec's been telling them the sunburst will be found somewhere, sometime.
And you, Harry, will you go on looking?
Sunburst would have been nice, but I've found something to take its place.
What, Harry?
You.
No, you haven't found me.
It's Moorhead after all. Well, give him my congratulations, just in case I don't see him again.
You're leaving?
Yeah, tonight. I went back to the tent. Morgan and I talked for a while, then we turned in. When I heard him snoring, I slipped out of bed and rummaged through his jacket. Found the stone all right, one of the pockets. 10 minutes later, I crawled through the opening into Manco's tomb. Just as I'd expected, Moorhead and Cardoza had left their equipment in the tomb. Flashlights, crowbars, carrying sacks. The mummy of Manco was in the center of the room. At the far end was a great stone throne, and above it, the stone sunburst. Played the flashlight on the sunburst. It was highly polished stone and shot back the light at me like a mirror. The stone map showed the carving of a mirror. I turned to see where the rays reflected by the sunburst would focus in the opposite wall. Yes, they pinpointed just one particular slab of stone. I grabbed one of the crowbars. The slab started to move, and then picked up the flashlight and aimed it at the opening. Golden sunburst, hundreds of jewels flashing red and green and blue and white and yellow.
Lift it out, Harry.
More.
I'm not working for you.
Don't give me an argument, buddy boy, because I got 6 good answers right here staring you in the face. You should have taken the gun, too, Harry. All right, now lift down that sunburst. All right. Now slip it into this gunny sack.
I guess you win, Morgan.
You ever had any doubts about this?
You got him!
That's a good take.
Give me that gunny sack.
Give it to me.
Thanks, Harry.
I must have been out for some time. When I finally came to, Morgan was gone, and his sunburst with him. I crawled out of the tomb and ran to the mouth of the tunnel. The whole camp was awake. Indians with lighted torches were running toward the hills. Two shots from the direction of the trail over the mountain peak. Thanks for the clue, Morgan. Climb up, and up, and up. Finally, the trail ran along a narrow shelf of rock hanging out over sheer space, empty, black space. That was your last bullet, Morgan. Number six. Morgan? Morgan!
Harry? Harry? Help me up, Harry. It's my knees. They just buckled under me. It's the altitude.
I want that sunburst, Morgan.
I'm an old man, Harry. There's nothing left. Nothing. You should have seen me in the old days, Harry. I was rugged then.
Give me the sunburst.
No. No, it's mine. It's mine!
Why did you bring the sunburst back to us?
Well, in the first place, I didn't take it. All I did was find it and then get it away from Morgan.
Speaking for the government of Peru, Mr. Steele, I wish that there were some way in which we might show our appreciation.
You can. You can tell me where I'll find Miss Antonescu.
I believe she's in her tent.
Thanks. But there might be one other thing, Colonel.
Name it, sir.
Well, speaking for the government of Peru, maybe you might arrange an exit visa on my passport.
It shall be done.
Thank you. See you in the morning, gentlemen.
Yes.
And they join me now for a curtain call. Charlton Heston and Nicole Moret.
Fed to the courtesy of Universal International Studios, whose latest release is the next Tuesday night to hear Miracle on 34th Street, starring Edmund Gwenn.
The Lux Radio Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 14th of December, 1954, on CBS. Star Charlton Heston was not often heard on radio, being the enormous presence he was in major motion pictures. Just 4 years before the broadcast we just heard, he starred in his breakout role as Antony in the film version of Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, and was just 2 years away from his defining role as Moses in Cecil B. DeMille's The Ten Commandments. He did receive some radio fanfare in 1950, though, after starring in his first of a five-movie deal for Paramount Pictures, and that was courtesy of George Fisher and his Hollywood Calling interview series.
This is George Fisher, and now I'm speaking to you from a Paramount Studio soundstage, to be exact, the dressing room of a brilliant new film star, Mr. Charlton Heston. We first met many months ago when Charlton was signed by Hal Wallace and introduced to the press by means of a cocktail party at Paramount. Later that same evening, we saw rushes of his first picture, Dark City. Hello, Charlton.
How are you, George?
Fine.
Why don't you call me Chuck?
Chuck is good.
Let's do that.
What kind of reaction, then, did you get the night that you met the Hollywood press?
I would call it an overwhelmed reaction. Meeting them all in one lump like that kind of took me by storm.
Did our movie town reporters, the guys and gals, give you the full treatment? I mean, did any of them scare you at all?
I would say they rolled out the red carpet. They couldn't have been nicer.
I thought they were pretty wonderful, too. That was rather a novel way, I thought, for a producer to introduce a new star. First a party, then to show rushes of his first picture. And I might add that we were all quite impressed.
Well, that's good to hear. I hope so.
As I remember it, I'm trying to recall, you sounded a little like Gable. Did anybody mention that to you?
I've heard that a couple of times. These past 3 weeks, I've been going around the country on kind of a press
Meet
relations
press
junket.
Tour.
And two or three people have said that.
Well, do you think that Hal Wallace is trying to groom you to be another Gable?
No, I don't think so. What he has in mind, and I know what I would like to do, is to try and do as many different kinds of parts as possible and not try to emulate the work of any other star.
Well, now, you're a pretty big character.
An awful lot of me.
How tall are you? How much do you weigh?
6'2". I go about 210 when I don't get fat.
You go about 210. I wouldn't last two rounds. Now, your co-star in Dark City, Chuck, is Lisbeth Scott.
That's right.
How was it working with Lisbeth, our
very
selfie
nice.
Dream girl?
She's a very nice girl. I had a lot of fun. In fact, the whole cast and company, and for that matter, everyone on the Paramount lot was as... You know, it could have been very difficult for an actor coming from another medium into pictures and stepping into a leading role in his first film, but they really couldn't have been nicer.
What was the other medium that you're referring to, stage or TV or
well,
radio?
Well, both. Mm-hmm. And I did a little radio when I was in college. I sort of earned my way through doing soap opera out of Chicago. They used to all do it out of there, you remember.
That's one way to get through college.
Yeah.
How old are you, Charlton?
27.
Did you get to Broadway finally, and any hits there?
Only one hit. I was in four plays on Broadway, but I didn't pick well, or the audience didn't like them on the last three. But the first one I was in was Antony and Cleopatra with Catherine Cornell, and that ran a year. But then the next three did a total between the three of them, I think, of about 18 performances.
Thank you very much, Charlton Heston, for letting us invade your dressing room on the Paramount lot. And it's really been a real big joy to talk to you and hear your opinions of Hollywood, and lots of luck in your career at Paramount Studios.
Thanks a lot, George.
Over what would be a long career, Charlton Heston would go on to make 12 movies for the Paramount Studio. That first contract of five films that began with Dark City would wrap with his performance in The Secret of the Incas. And a year after that movie's release in 1955, he did do a special signing with Paramount for publicity, coming to a contractual agreement to have his infant son, Frazier Heston, play the role of Baby Moses in The Ten Commandments. And that wraps up this hour of Adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us again for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.